Okay, ready? Go ahead.
That's great. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
One more volume.
7, 8, 9, 10.
All right. We're just going to get started.
That's right.
You ready?
Good.
Welcome to the Eric Lang Show, everybody. We're here in the, what do you call this room, Morgan?
I have no idea. I really never sat in this room.
You never sat in this room?
The other night we used it as like kind of a staging room for all the bags, gift bags and stuff, but other than that, never really have a lunch up here at the Men's Grill, just literally underneath us right now.
Mostly hanging downstairs.
Yeah.
A lot of people down there. So anyway, today we're here with Morgan Hoffman at his home course, Arcola Country Club. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Today's like the first recovery day.
Yeah.
That I'm kind of feeling back to normal. Leading up to the event, we didn't really sleep for 5 days, so it was really hectic, but extremely worth it.
I can imagine. I mean, so today's Thursday, first day of the Northern Trust. Monday, mm-hmm. You had how many people out here? 100? 200?
Well, Sunday night, we had 700 at the event.
What?
And then on Monday, we had 275 golfers. So we had 56 fivesomes.
That's a lot.
And then we had about 150 volunteers.
Did Rory complain about slow play, or was he pretty well behaved?
No, he was great, actually. He was really well received. There were probably 10 people that came up to me and were like, hey, we didn't really know about how Rory was. And then when he did that interview for CNBC, and then was just so great with all the kids around here and the volunteers, they had a new respect for him.
Right. So you had a fundraiser. Tell if some people out here listening to the show are new to golf, they might not really know much about what's going on with you.
Yeah. So I'll kind of keep it short as I can, but it's a long story.
You got an hour. You got an hour. Whatever you want.
So since 2011, I started having atrophy from my sternum towards my underarm.
What does atrophy mean? Like atrophy, just pain?
No, atrophy means literally the muscle just disappearing. So it just, if you have, like if you look at your bicep and you had atrophy there, it would go all the way down to bone. You can just touch bone and no muscle would be there.
And you're so like, what's going on?
Yeah, so that's what happened with my right pec and like my ribs are showing. It was really bad, so I had no idea what was going on. And so for 6 years, starting in 2011 when I left college,
this is right when you turned pro.
Exactly.
You turned pro in 2010.
Yeah, 2011, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would have graduated 2012. I went pro a year early from Oklahoma State. And I spent 6 years searching for an answer. And I went to countless doctors, the Mayo Clinic, HSS, Cleveland Clinic, physical therapists, neurologists, and no one could figure it out. I was just like, come on. I mean, I went to Mayo Clinic for 5 days and I was like, look, I might not look messed up, but you know, I'm going to tell you what's going on and I want you to figure out what's happening. And I said, you have my my go ahead to run any test that you want, and I'm here, all yours, you know. So I laid in beds, went in CT scans, did blood tests, EMGs, all this stuff. And the last day came around and there were 8 doctors around my bed and they were like, yeah, we have no idea. I was like, what? How? This is like the best place in the world. And so it just continued.
What does it feel like to be there with 8 doctors who are telling you they don't know?
I felt like it was a joke, you know? I felt, I just couldn't believe it, you know? It couldn't have been that hard to figure out.
Was it painful?
It wasn't painful. That's the thing. It was just weakness progressing.
You're still competing. Mm-hmm. You're still playing regular schedule.
Right. So, like, over the years, my swing speed just kept going down and down.
From what to what?
I'd say, like, 120 in college to, like, right out in February this year, it was, like, 108, 107.
Whoa.
So, at that point, I was just like, all right, I need to figure this out and find a cure. But backing up to...
Yeah.
2016 in December, I finally found the answer. I went to HSS in New York City to a neurologist and
Upper East Side.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I sat down with the guy and he's like, look, I want to do a blood test, but I have an inkling that it could be muscular dystrophy. And right when he said that, I checked him off the list. I'm like, this guy's an idiot.
Fucking clown.
Like, yeah, there's no chance. That
yeah.
No
it's
one
just in, some small thing.
Right. No one in my family had it before.
Because it's super genetic.
Right.
That's the only way you got it.
Yeah, but there's learning more about it. There's onset genetic diseases, I guess, and it can happen from stress. Like, it can happen from the way you eat, the work that you do, all this kind of. It's insane. So I was like, all right, whatever, man. Let's do the test and we'll see what happens. And we did it, and he's like, yeah, it should be a month, maybe 2 months till we get the answer. I was like, all right, whatever. Anyway, 6 months go by. And he finally calls me.
Forgot about it, probably.
Yeah, probably.
You're like, I definitely don't have that.
Yeah, this guy. I was like, kind of checking it off the list, but I called him a few times and still no answer. So finally, he called me and he said, "Hey, yeah, you came back positive. You have muscular dystrophy." I'm like, well, what does that mean? Where do I go? What do I do? You know, like, he's like, "I don't know. I'm just telling you. So good luck."
No.
I was like, "All right, dude. See you. Peace."
Because I looked into it. There's nothing.
Yeah,
the first thing it says is nothing.
Right.
Nothing you can do.
Yeah, there's no cure. He's like, good luck. So then at that point, I was like researching where to go to get the help, you know.
And so that's like 10 months ago? Was that moment?
Yeah, it was...
like December?
Just like over a year ago.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, this is... everyone else found out in December.
Yeah, yeah.
This is earlier.
This is earlier.
Yeah.
So then I researched the best muscular dystrophy doctors in the country. So I went down to Miami and saw one. And I was like, okay, check me out. What do I do? You know, how do I go forward? Can I get better? He's like, no, there's no cure. We don't really know what to do except give you some physical therapy. But it looks like you're still strong. You can do all the muscle tests. You can raise your arms, all that kind of stuff. And so he's like, come back in about like 10 years when it gets worse, and we'll give you some physical therapy. At that point,
what?
I just started laughing. I was like, are you serious? And there were also like 5 doctors in the room. I said, how is this possible? I mean, this is ridiculous. So right at that point, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm going somewhere else out of the country. I'm going on a worldwide search to try and find a cure.
You did like an eat, pray, love.
Yeah, so it... that was like where the fire got lit under my ass, and just like, all right, let's do it. And at that point, I'd told my family, and I knew I wanted to come out with the story because there was no point in me just holding it in. And
right.
I knew that with my platform, I could help a lot of people. And with my perseverance, that I really know that there is a cure out there, that I know I'm going to find it. I'm going to do something with it. And at that point, I was researching different outlets to tell my story on, and the best one I found was the Players Tribune that Derek Jeter created, and it was incredible. They were really supportive. And
for some people who don't know what the Players Tribune is, mm-hmm. It's an event?
So the Players Tribune is an outlet for professional athletes to write their story. So it's like bunch of articles that are posted every day with different stories from personal stories that have basically never been told before, from professional athletes ranging through NFL, NHL, MLB, golf. So it's really, really cool. And originally I thought about doing it in a newspaper with the PGA Tour, and this kind of had a very unique feel to it, and they were really supportive. And originally, I thought that it would take me like a month to do and write, and it ended up taking 6 months because I just was in the middle of my season, and I wanted it to come out at the right time, and I wanted to edit it the way I saw fit. And originally, one of their writers helped me write it, and then I just was like, this doesn't sound like me, so I'd kind of redid it myself, and it turned out great. And
how long did it take you to write it?
I mean... it was really long. It was kind of uncomfortably long, like kind of thinking that people really wouldn't read it till the end because there were some important points that I touched on, and wanted people to know, but the response that I got, most people really did look into it and read the whole thing, which I was really surprised about, and just showed the support out there for athletes and golfers. So that made me really happy.
It was a tremendous amount of support. I mean, it was like, it must have been unbelievable almost for
it
you.
It was. And I mean, other than having my fellow tour pros reach out to me and be like, hey, look, I read your article and it was really cool and we support you. But the most shocking and humbling outreaches were people on social media writing me and being like, your story touched me in the fact that I've never told anyone I've had muscular dystrophy and I'm telling you for the first time. And I was like, this is unbelievable.
Just
like,
people.
Yeah, just random people. On Instagram, on Twitter,
I was like, "You must have had thousands of these."
It was insane. And they, this one girl was a professional gymnast, and she said, "Hey, I had the same disease, and no one knows how fast or slow it progresses." And I was on the bars doing flips and like sticking landings, and 6 months later, I was in a wheelchair. And you bringing out this awareness is really special, and I just wanted to tell you that, and like it gives me goosebumps now, and stories like that just motivate me to get this where I want.
Keep doing it.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, I talked to Michelle over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We were talking about you, and I talked a little bit with Charlie about you. It's funny, actually, before you and I met today for the first time, we had made a joke about you years ago that you and Charlie were brothers. When we were in a porta potty, and I texted Charlie this week to say, what are you up to on Monday? And he was like, going out with my brother. And I was like, I didn't know you had a brother. And he's like, Morgan, you idiot.
That's awesome.
Like, oh yeah.
We joke about that on tour too. We were like, dude, we got to play that new Zurich event, the team event. Like, the brothers out there, that would be so sick.
You spell it differently.
Yeah, we do.
You have two N's.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably better.
Yeah.
I like two N's.
It is better. He's like my younger brother. Less significant.
So, but you then, you know, Michelle was saying that, you know, the idea that you have a, you know, platform is a way to put it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may not have a cure, but you at least have something you can do.
Yeah.
Right, and that's to push it in that direction.
Absolutely. I'm in the process of working on a cure. I spent I've been home for 3 weeks, but I spent 4 months in Nepal and doing this Ayurvedic treatment with a doctor who barely spoke English and lived at 14,000 feet in the Himalayan mountains and picked herbs out of his backyard and finding them in the snow and crushed them up with a rock in front of me and put it on my body for 6 hours a day. And it was difficult. I was alone. It's nice to be speaking English again.
Your girl couldn't come?
She came for 3 weeks in the middle, right, which is awesome to break it up. But I learned a lot about myself there, and 2 months in, the doctor told me before I came, he was like, look, I've cured a lot of people with cancer, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's, diabetes, and he's like, come here for 2 weeks and you're going to see a difference. I was like, all right. He said, you can leave after that if it doesn't work. I said, all right, fine. So 2 weeks goes by and nothing really happens. Anyway, 2 months go by and nothing really happens. And I was like, all right, this is ridiculous. I'm spending a lot of money and it's hard to understand. And half of the ingredients are herbs that don't even exist in the U.S. and don't have English names. And I was kind of just losing hope. And I sat down alone and looked over everything. And I was like, if I leave now and like kind of nix the last month, I'll always think for the rest of my life, what if I stay there for the last month and something changed? So that motivated me to stay. And I stayed and it happened. I started noticing something different. And as I said earlier, in my right pec, all you could see is bone. And when I flexed it, you know, if you flex your pec and you put your hand on it, you can feel muscle moving. And now I put my hand and fingers in between the ribs, and you can feel muscle flexing when I flex. So it's really, really promising. I have 6 more months of herbs that I took back from Nepal that I have here and take twice a day. So he was really pushy about saying, like, he had not one inkling of doubt. He was like, yeah, you're gonna be cured. I mean, not one time. I was like, look, man, this, nothing's happening for 2 months, and you're telling me in the beginning 2 weeks you're gonna see something different. And so how am I supposed to believe you? And he never got flustered. He never had doubt. His facial expression never changed. He's like, yeah, I mean, it's a fact. You're gonna be cured. I was like, all right, whatever. Like, I've heard a million different things. And
what's his name?
His name is Kamal Joshi.
Where is it?
It's in Kathmandu, Nepal.
Okay.
But he's from Bazang, Nepal, which is like up in the mountains, middle of nowhere. So the last month something started happening, and now what I was saying earlier is he was kind of being pushy. He's like, when you get back to the States, go back to the doctor that you got genetically tested, and it'll come back negative that you don't have muscular dystrophy anymore.
What?
I was like, all right, man. Look,
that's aggressive.
All right, that's aggressive. Exactly.
You don't understand.
So I said, all right, I'm going to take these oral herbs for 3 more months when I get home, and then I'll go back. And if it keeps improving, then I'll go back. If it doesn't, I don't know what I'm going to do. But so in October, I'm planning to go back and get this genetic test, and we'll see what happens. And
go back to HSS.
Yeah, or I mean, whatever. Whatever lab that can do the same test, yeah.
So I guess so you've got basically 7 years of steady, noticeable decrease in the muscle,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got 6 months in Nepal, 3 months,
almost four, yeah,
almost four, and it's the only time it's gotten better.
Yeah, but and before I went to Nepal, like for the last year that I've been on tour, it's in my left pec now, and then also my leg. You can just see, and I can feel, like, going upstairs, you can, like, just feel weakness, and it's a really weird feeling. It's hard to describe.
It's not painful.
It's just, like, it's like if someone scooped out with a spoon your muscle, and you can just feel the muscles around that area working and not that area.
Is it, can I touch it?
I mean,
Is it weird? It doesn't feel like anything?
No, it's just, like.
It just feels normal.
It's just bones right here.
What is it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Like here.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like.
And then this one, there's pack.
Yeah, it's like. Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You just feel. It feels like you're super, super skinny
right.
in one spot.
Exactly.
Is it weird to look at? Does it look different to you?
Yeah, very different.
So, okay, wait. So you must be pretty inspired.
I am. I'm excited. You know, But I'm not putting my eggs in one basket yet. I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm just going to continue the regimen and then get tested and see what happens and go from there. And no matter what happens, if it comes back negative or positive, still I have a long road ahead of me, because if it comes back negative, then...
And you go move to Nepal.
If it comes back negative, then I'm going to be able to help a lot of people. Comes back positive, I'm going to continue my world search and find something that
you don't. If it comes up positive, you don't think you'll go back to Nepal?
I'm not sure yet. I have a few other avenues that are very promising right now.
Germany's got to have some weird.
Germany does. That's funny. You said that.
Those Germans are fucking. Are you German? What's off?
I am. Yeah. A little bit.
A little bit.
Yep.
Got a lot of golf. Do you play golf? You've been playing now? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I played.
Played Monday?
I played Monday. It was the first 18 holes I played in 6 months.
Fuck!
Yeah, so I was...
Coming off of, like,
yeah.
just a life around golf. What did it feel like to hit a ball?
I've swung, like, a couple times, and it... actually, the first time I swung, I was with my buddy Rafa, who played on Monday also. We went to the Bears Club and went to the par 3 course. I was, like, just itching to get out on the course, and... I knew
you live in Florida now.
Yeah. I knew driver wasn't a good idea, so I was like, let's just go hit some short irons. And on my fourth shot, I made a hole in one. I was like, there's no way. He was like, fuck you.
Such
this is bullshit.
Dick.
You're still good. How is this possible?
How long was the hole?
It was only like 130.
Still.
But still, I was pumped. I was running around.
One hopping in, sucking
no,
back.
It,
jar?
Straight in.
Buckets.
And, yeah, then we went over the chipping green. I was still hitting little nippers. It was pretty sick. So I was excited. But we played in carts on Monday, and after like seven holes, I was dead.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like...
Tired.
Just like physically, like not getting the club around. Were you even caring at that point? I don't
know. No, I mean, I was playing all right. I made three birdies in a row out there, which was nice. And I, on number seven, we were lucky enough to have BMW sponsor, and we had three cars out there for hole in ones. And on one, it was like 212. I had a 4-iron and lipped out for a hole in one, which was like, it was crazy. So I had a great day. And the only reason I had to play was because we had probably 10 pros drop out last minute.
Yeah.
But that's expected, you know.
Yeah. Ricky was going to come.
Mm-hmm.
Rory came and he wasn't even playing in the event. He came up just for this.
It was amazing. Yeah.
I want to hear. I've been to Nepal. I've been to Kathmandu. I've been to Nepal twice.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And the first time I went, I was working on like a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
We spent like 7 days there.
Where'd you stay?
We stayed at the Hotel Dalai La.
Area?
In the super touristy area, I want to say.
Tamil?
Tamil, yeah, right. Yeah. Tamil. And,
that's the best spot, man. There's nightclubs.
Yeah, we went to a nightclub.
Yeah.
So we went to a nightclub in Kathmandu the second time. Dude, I don't know what it was called.
Okay.
But we walked in. Oh, no, it was the one. It was the staircase goes up the corner of the building in a spiral.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
On the top floor. It's like a disco.
Uh-huh.
So we were early, though, and that was closed. So on our way down the stairs, we saw another little nightclub, and it was like very low ceiling. Everyone was in full like Hindu garb, and there was like 15 women on like a tiny stage with one man wearing a like jeans and a jean shirt,
mm-hmm.
and he was singing, and everyone was smoking cigarettes, drinking, and so we were getting into it, though, and you know, Adventures in Golf. It's just the three of us, my two friends.
I saw one of your episodes.
It?
Yeah.
Did you see the one in Nepal?
I think it was in India.
Okay, we did two in India and two in Nepal.
Where you guys were playing like with the street golf?
Yeah. That was a good one. You would love the one in Kathmandu.
Cause yeah, I've got to watch it now.
You recognize it.
Yep.
And then we went to Pokhara.
Okay.
But anyway, so
Pokhara.
Sorry,
like,
I'm an American.
I'm like a local now. Yeah. I can speak it almost
Everyone's
fluently.
Like, are you a backpacker? Probably to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go, and we're in this like. It turns out it's a karaoke bar,
mm-hmm.
and then we're dancing, and I'm getting into the dancing, and I'm sweating, and I realize like after the eighth guy comes up to me and asks me to dance, I'm pretty sure it's a gay bar.
Nice. That's awesome.
And then I was like, this is all right. Do we stay or do we go? Anyway, we had a great time, and the second time we went because you know the. You got to check out that Royal Nepal Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's really beautiful. I don't know. Might get peace and quiet there.
I played at Gorkhana.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, because I've been in Nepal many times. And
okay. Oh, prior to this?
Yeah, I have friends there that Sean Einhaus, he played Oklahoma State with me.
Okay.
We knew each other since we were 16, and his mother owns two hotels, one in Kathmandu, one in Dulek Hill, which is up in the mountains.
Okay. Oh, so you're already familiar with Nepal. That's already unusual.
Mm-hmm. It is unusual, yeah. but yeah, I got to... I've known a bunch of the locals there, but this time it was like I really kind of embraced it and got... every day I had a translator and I asked them two new words a day. So I was like almost fluent and I would go to his mom and be like, hey, you know, like, say something, like a new sentence. And
right.
She was like, where'd you learn that? Like, but
surprising the shit out of him,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, check out Rain Sunglasses, R-A-E-N. That's a cool golf brand. No, it's not really a golf. I'm sorry. I'm out of it. It's not a golf brand. It's a sunglass brand. And here's the thing. I paid for these glasses a couple years ago. I bought a pair, and I'm a sunglass freak. Like, I'm always wearing sunglasses. I love a good pair. You know, I don't go too wild. I don't really go, Kurt Cobain on it, but I do definitely look for a pair that's like, you know, gonna vibe with me. And Rain just seems to fit my face so well. I like them. I like the way they fit. I like the lenses. They got a lot of nice colors out there, you know, like the lens itself. Like I like the vintage green. I like the brown. And you know, one of my favorite things about the Rain glasses is the three, it's a threefold love affair I have with them. One, they look great. Two, they feel great. They don't give me that stupid headache that sunglasses give me, which I'm literally like, get off my face, you evil psycho. And the third thing is they're an accessible price. That's the coolest thing. I mean, check them out. They're not crazy expensive. And if you go to rain.com and use the code RAINGOLF, RAENGOLF, you'll get 20% off, which honestly, I'm a little jealous. They make a lot of great glasses right now. I rock the, what's the name of the ones that I rock? I rock so many of them. I love them. Let me see if I can find them. Anyway, while I look for them, hang on, I'm going to look for them. I dig the Remy and I dig the Mason. Those are some sick shades. Check them out. They're not crazy expensive. And if you go to rain.com and use the code RAINGOLF, RAENGOLF, you'll get 20% off. Check it out. Rain.com, RAEN.com. Use code RAINGOLF at checkout, RAEN. And you will be sorted, my friends. 20% off. Please check it out.
It sounds like, I mean, if you've already been to Nepal, you must love to travel, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm,
how often, you know, like, obviously a lot of things changed for you, and before that you had a pretty regimented schedule with being a professional athlete. How would you kind of work in travel into your life?
My mom is a flight attendant for Delta.
Yes.
And so she's always taking me everywhere. Like, we would just go on one-day trips to Paris to, like, it was just ridiculous.
One day to Paris?
Yeah, because she has a turnaround, so she'd be working. I would just fly on, like, an empty...
You would get a dead
any MC seat. Yeah.
So she'd be working. Would you ever try to help her or anything like that?
No, but it was awesome because most of the time, like, we would have to make sure that flying standby, that there were a lot of empty seats. And with her status, like, how long she's been working there, she just celebrated her 40th year, actually.
40 years.
Yeah. So she...
I give big respect to your mom, dude. I love flight attendants. I love all of them. It's great.
She's great. They work hard, man. Yeah. It's crazy.
And they, you know what? They unfortunately get... Anyone who's listening to this, if a flight attendant's rude to you, she's not being rude to you. It's just that she's in a tough situation, mm-hmm. where it's like everyone's being rude to her because no one likes flying.
Everybody.
Everyone's stressed. Yep. Everyone bought the cheapest ticket, so they're in the smallest fucking seat. And that's your problem, dude. Yeah. It's not her problem.
And they want everything. Like, why don't you have peanuts on the flight today?
Because
people
are fucking allergic to them.
Exactly.
Well, relax.
But yeah, so she got me into traveling, and then two of my uncles flew in the Navy, Air Force. And when I was in college at Oklahoma State, I had kind of an affinity for flying, and so I got my pilot's license. And
you have a plane.
I've
heard that you've flown the plane to play around in golf in Florida. Is that true?
I've flown it a bunch of random places just for, like, my girlfriend and I, we would just be sitting in Jupiter at our house and be like, hey, at like 9 o'clock in the morning, let's go down to Key West for lunch and come back, and it's so sick. Or like to the Bahamas for dinner, you know, and it's so easy because once you get to know how to, like, file flight plans and go in customs and you know the people there and print up all the forms and have them filled out in certain areas. That's just really quick.
What kind of plane?
It's called a Piper Mirage.
Ooh, yeah. You can almost go acrobatic with those, can't you?
I mean, it's not recommended. A Piper Cub, maybe, but right. Mirage, yeah.
Do you know what a Citabria is? Have you seen those?
Mm-hmm.
I rode those one of those. Sweet. Yeah, we had to put parachutes on because we were going to intentionally invert it.
Yeah, of course. It's an acrobatic plane.
Do you ever stall the engine just for fun?
I mean, we do it a lot in training, but not for fun. You do zero gravity a bunch, and like my buddy Rafa, who I mentioned earlier, we went over to play, and then Calusa Pines in Tampa, and then came back a late night flight because we had dinner and all that stuff, and we had four guys and four clubs in there. And one of them, Rafa, fell asleep, and he was like, hey, all right, everybody, don't say anything, so I bring it up, bring it back down, and wake him up, and he's, like, literally floating in the air and just, like, screaming. It was so funny. But that was with my old plane. It's called the Piper Saratoga.
Right.
But
did you see American Made? How did you not see American Made, dude?
I don't think so.
Tom Cruise?
Yes, I have. Okay.
It's so good.
I don't watch many movies, but yes, that was one I made sure I did watch.
Yeah, because he's just going back and forth, like quadruple teaming each country.
Yep.
I did love that one. I love flying. I don't know. I don't understand it, really. I'm actually terrified of it, but...
You're terrified, but you love it.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's kind of like golf, you know? Like, I'm terrified of, like, a six-footer for eagle, but I love it, you know?
Of course, all right.
So I want to hear more about Nepal, though. So you show up there, and I mean, like, I don't know, not a lot of people get to go to Nepal. Not a lot of people find a reason to go.
it's a very hard place to go.
Yeah.
It's hard to get to, and then when you get there, it's hard to be there.
Right.
You know, you gotta, you know, we, I remember we were shooting there, and our DP is like a, he's like a brick house.
Yeah.
The guy's like 6'3", he's just like jacked, mm-hmm. And on the last day, he orders an iced tea with ice in it. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? Why are you doing that? Why would you get ice?
Don't order ice, yeah.
Not supposed to. He's like, it'll be fine.
And what happened?
And he got sick.
Yeah.
You know, we had a two-day trip home with like a fun layover in Hong Kong and a fun layover in Tokyo.
Oh,
and
he's sweet.
Just diarrhea. So, any, you know what I mean? Just poor guy.
Yeah.
But like, you know, what were the moments like for you? Aside from the work stuff.
Aside from doing the treatment every day, it was amazing. I got lucky enough to know some of the most influential people there, and including Sean's mom, Sangeeta, and she does a lot of charity work. And when we were 19, Sean and I started the charity in Nepal, which we raised money with the.
Wait, this is your second charity.
Yeah, this was like kind of a one-time thing because it was really hard to get. We had only cash to get into Nepal, and they're like really strict, especially with the Maoist government back then. It was really hard and very corrupt. So when we were at Oklahoma State, Sean taught me about Nepal, and we the Oklahoma State golf men's golf team and women's golf team spent one day playing as many holes as we possibly could, and getting donors, friends, family, whatever to donate. Per hole, and we were going to take the money over, and there was a school there, and we bought them all like new Mac computers. I'd never seen computers in my life, and I think we only raised like 20 grand or something, but when we were teenagers that was so sick.
Well, it goes a long way in Nepal.
Yeah, right? It does, huge. But to go back, what I was saying is Sangeeta has a new, it's called Camp Hope, which I'm sure you've heard of, the huge earthquake there about like 6 years ago. And there were three huge villages that were completely destroyed. And she built a camp in the heart of Kathmandu for all these people. And now the parents all went back to rebuild the village while the kids are still in school in Kathmandu. And so they need people to look after them. So Chelsea, my girlfriend, went over there for 2 weeks just to volunteer, and before I went there, and that's how she actually learned about the doctor that I eventually went to, and helped me for 90 days. So it was like something that was kind of meant to happen.
It's very coincidental.
Yeah, very. It's about Nepal. Anyway, the people were great. Everybody was so nice and caring. Chelsea made a friend, like she says, one of her best friends now. Her name is Pooja, and she grew up in an orphanage and doesn't have any family, and she lives on her own now and works at Sangeeta's hotel. So her, Chelsea and Pooja were the ones that kind of ran through the Camp Hope when Chelsea was there, just like taking care of the kids. And Pooja had a very close love for orphanages and kids that need help, obviously. So when I got there, Chelsea was like, you need to meet Pooja, she's so nice and incredible and love it, whatever. And so the first time I met her, she had a gift for me already, which I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like,
we don't do that in America.
Yeah, like, and then the next time we went out to lunch, she was huge in showing me Nepal. And she taught me about all the local spots. Like, I'm vegan, so I have to find different restaurants. And there was
how long have you been vegan?
Just about a year now.
Okay.
And it's just for health reasons, to get this stuff better, you know.
Did you talk to any of the professional athletes about being vegan?
Yeah, a few. Yeah. There was actually one here at the event at Arcola, James Anderson, who's been in the NFL for 10 years, and him and his wife are vegan, and he's like 240 in jacks, so it's I know it can be done to gain weight on it.
I do. I have a bit. I tried being vegetarian for mm-hmm. a year. I love vegans. I love vegan restaurants. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time doing it personally, but yeah. I'm fascinated by it, and I'm sure that it's the better way to go, to mm-hmm. be totally honest.
Yeah,
how do you
clean.
Feel? I mean, do you? It's very clean.
I feel amazing. Yeah. Ever since I started it, well, I went off dairy 5 years ago, and since then, that was like completely changed my life.
What precipitated the dairy decision?
My stomach would always hurt, and I just started researching it, and my trainer really taught me to do it, because I would always have like sandwiches with cheese on them, or you know, like all kinds of stuff, and butter on like just cooking eggs. You make it with butter or something. And since I took out dairy, it was completely new. Like, my skin changed, my energy changed. Like, I wasn't tired, my stomach never hurt. And then completely eliminating meat was another level. And my stomach is always good. I don't ever have any bloating or, like, anything like that. So it's great. And the studies I've done to get back on the subject of what I did in Nepal is every single day, in between my treatments, which were at 7:30 and then 2 p.m., I would just literally research food. Everything from spinach, kale, to jackfruit, to soursop, which has been cured, proven to cure cancer better than
radiation, chemo.
Yeah, no. Chemo, exactly.
Wait, what is soursop?
Exactly, it's a fruit that nobody has heard of because it cures cancer. Like, look it up.
How is that possible?
Yeah, it's insane.
What does it look like? What does it taste
like? It's like a green spiky fruit, and in the middle it's white and weird. I don't know. I've never had it, but I've researched
it. Where does it grow? You got to get you some.
Well, I don't have cancer, thankfully.
You're right. You don't have cancer.
But yeah,
might as well just get them all out of the way.
Right. Exactly. just eat everything that can cure everything. But yeah, I researched so many herbs and food, and I was on like a complete food spiritual journey over there. I did before I went to Nepal, I did a 16-day cleanse of just eating red grapes and water. So that was really tough. And then
how many red grapes? Like a bushel or two, right?
So every day to keep up my calories, I had a food scale and I weighed like 10 of them and then calculated it. So for 16 days I had to eat 800 grapes a day. So Whole Foods knew me personally as the grape guy.
He's into grapes, yeah. I guess.
Well, not really, not anymore. I can't say.
Did you get WhithPits?
Yeah, WhithPits is the most healthy. Yeah, because the other ones are like chemically engineered, and just don't get me started on this. People will have no idea what I'm talking about.
I can't talk grapes, huh?
But
sorry, we're on a tangent.
All my research in Nepal was just about food, and I read probably 7 books about raw diet and basically just eating fruits and vegetables and how much it can help you and how it can cure basically everything. And the main general consensus is alkalizing your body. So any disease comes from acid. So
This sounds crazy to me, I'll be honest with you, but it's true. I'm
fine.
Assuming.
Yeah, yeah. So any disease is an over acid in your body. So it's called acidosis. Cancer, like if you look at cancer cells versus, if you look at a person with cancer cells and you look at a person that's vegan and then you take their blood and put it in the cancer blood, it'll cure it.
What?
Yeah. Because it's just not...
So all you need is a friend that's vegan.
Just transfusion. But yeah, so it's insane. I learned there are 2 doctors that I studied a lot. Dr. Sebi, he's like an 80-year-old African guy, and he passed away. But his program is just eating fruits and vegetables and certain nuts, and that's it. And
super hunter, super gatherer.
Right, and he's cured thousands of people with cancer. And then this other guy, Dr. Robert Morse, who I researched for a long time and ended up being in Tampa, so I went to go see him, and he's the same way. If you alkalize your body and basically just go on a diet of eating raw fruit and vegetables, like, you can cure anything.
Have you begun to become suspicious of, like, some conspiracy?
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like you would be.
I am, yeah.
What? Tell me about what's going on, because I don't want to put it in my words.
I mean, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but like there's no advertising anywhere of anything like pharmaceuticals curing disease. There's no advertising of food. curing anything. It's just if you have something, you need to be treated with pills and shots or surgery.
Right? Lack of sleep.
Right.
Lack of attention.
Right. So doctors don't tell you anything about nutrition and how to cure it. They just give you a pill and be like, all right, take this. And it doesn't really get them better. So they keep coming back and continuing to take the pills. And
it's kind of like a lease car situation.
Right.
They're like, just come back and get another
car.
They
get you back.
Come back and get another car.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I want to make... creating this health and wellness center, that's been my dream for the whole foundation, and that's why we've been trying to raise so much money. And this health and wellness center is going to be amazing. We're going to have a restaurant in there, just raw vegan food.
And it'll be a cool restaurant. It's going to be people will go. They'll want to go there.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not just that. That's a very small part of it. There, my vision is to have you go in and book a day. First for muscular dystrophy patients, but I want everybody to be allowed there to come and just better their health. And you book a day, kind of like a 10-hour day, and have 1 hour with each specialist. So we'll have someone who will look at your blood, analyze that. Then you go to a nutritionist, completely tell them exactly what you're eating from when you get up to when you go to bed, how you're sleeping. Then you go to a trainer, redo your workout program, get on a good exercise. Then you'll go to a physical therapist if you're hurting or need to get better. And then there'll be meditation classes, and it's going to be a one-stop shop. That's my kind of phrase that I've been using, because there's nowhere else like it in the world that I've found that you can go and literally take care of everything. And mental health is probably number one. And when I was in Nepal, I did a 7-day meditation class, 3 hours a day for 7 days, and then the sixth day was a 12-hour day. And it was put on by Sadhguru, which is Sadhguru, one word. And I've been watching his videos for 3 years, and it kind of just fell into my lap by meeting a couple named Kaya and Himanshu from India. And they actually ironically grew up in New Jersey, where the IT people made a fortune, and they just had enough of it, went back to India, where their families are from, and met this Sadhguru and went to his center and fell in love with it. And now Kaya is his number one and teaches these inner engineering courses that are 7 days long. And she was begging me to go. I started there in April, and she's like, look, in July we have this inner engineering, it's 7 days, and you should really come. I think it would really help. And originally I said, I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm in this, health is first to me, and I need to get this done, and I want to stay on this program so I can't miss any days. She's like, okay. So we kept talking and learned a lot about her and her journey and how Sadhguru changed her life. And he doesn't label himself as any religion. It's just, he's a mystic. He realized everything on his own. It's incredible the things that he teaches people and how to meditate and how simple he makes it.
What was the biggest like concept or way of thinking or takeaway that you had from that 7 days?
He breaks down the word responsibility. And it's the ability to have a response and the ability to react. And a lot of people think responsibility is like, if I knock over this water bottle, I'm responsible, right? But if you knock over a water bottle, am I responsible? Most people would say no, because you did it. But I am responsible because I can do something about it. I can either help you, I can sit back. If I have no way to help, if I'm not capable, then I can still feel sorry or something. Like, and that's still a reaction. So it's a big in-depth journey that you can go on, and that's just one very small subject in his teachings. And
it's sort of like, I mean, this may be very trite, but mm-hmm. it's sort of like when you walk up to a green and you're looking for your ball mark.
Yep, exactly.
Well, there's a lot of ball marks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you responsible for someone else's ballpark? Most people would be like, no, they made their own. They should fix it.
Yeah, it's like, well, though, but I'm responsible for the course, right. And I'm a guest.
Yeah. So it depends on, like, for me, perspective is a big thing. Like, I've mentioned in one of my articles before that one man's garbage is another man's treasure, you know, and that says a lot about.
You didn't come up with that, though.
I did not. No.
I'm teasing.
Not at all. I wish I did. That would be sick.
You can't take credit for that. Cannot. So no, but tell me how you related to that person.
That statement.
Yeah.
It's just taking yourself back from the way you've been taught to look at everything. Like going down the street and seeing a homeless person, you know, and they have like no shoes on, right? And you go, oh, I'm so sorry, sir. Like, I'd love to buy you some shoes or something. And he's like, no, I'm happy. I have a coat on. And like, you know, it's just like perspective. And Nepal is the perfect place to learn about yourself and learn about perspective, because these kids there, they're not living with a family. I'm relating to, referring to Camp Hope, which I mentioned that Chelsea went and volunteered at. And these kids are so happy. And there's probably 50 to 100 of them there. And they have one source of water. There's garbage everywhere. There's no disposal system. They just pile it up, plastic, everything, and just burn it. And they don't eat much, and they're so generous. You walk in and they're like, hey, can we get you some rice? You know, can we, like, you want to come and sleep under my tent here that doesn't have a bed, that has a dirt floor, and we have a thatched bed here with just some sticks and stuff? Like, it's insane. Like, they try to offer everything they have, and we go there with, like, you see guests come in there with $200 cameras and jackets that are like these trekkers that come in with like all this stuff on, and they're just taking pictures and don't realize like what everybody's going through and how their perspective is so different. It's insane. It's changed my life with the way the people are there.
Yeah, I think for me that's my favorite thing about traveling, is it's not so much the experience of traveling and that's exciting and that's mm-hmm. interesting, but it's the experience of coming home slightly different.
Right.
And being able to look at my home in a new way. You can't, you can only do that. You can't sort of think that. Or I'm wondering, you know, we haven't met before, but you're 27, 28?
I just turned 29 like 29. A couple weeks ago. Okay. Yeah.
So you're 29, you're really wise. I'm sure I'm not the only person to say that, so you can... Thanks. Take it or leave it, but I don't know you before, right? So how has your personality changed in the last couple of years, year or two?
I don't know if my personality has changed. I've always loved giving and loved helping people. I've always been adventurous. I've always been an adrenaline junkie. But I've become more grounded. I've learned a lot about myself in the treatments that I had over there, from laying on a bed for 5 to 6 hours a day. And I hate lotion. I hate putting like anything on me. Like, I hate it. So I have to have like spray sunscreen. And two, I hate dudes touching me. Like, it's just like, I don't know.
Went there for 6 months with that, or four
right,
months.
Right, and I had two Nepali guys rubbing literally every inch of me, and I hated it. I can't tell you.
Like, even?
I mean, no, I had these little, like...
You had, like, undies on?
Weird underwear on, which was, I have crazy pictures
like
of it.
Like a toga kind of thing? Or like
no, it's, they were, like, paper almost.
Weird.
It was, like... tidy whiteys, but they were blue, and it was made out of like I don't even know what.
Right.
I hated it so much, and it was just something that, like, some people hate sharks, some people hate needles, some people hate, you know, whatever it is. I just didn't like when if I go to a massage or a spa, like, I have to have a lady. I don't know. I just feel more comfortable.
I'm okay with that.
I don't know why. Yeah. Whatever. You can judge me. You can judge me or not.
totally judging you, Morgan. In spite of everything else, he's sexist. It's awful. It's just so awful. Big scoop. No, but I mean, yeah.
But it was just, it was hard to get through and not seeing progress for 2 months. And just, it was mentally trying. And there were so many things that I got through and I'm proud of myself for. And going through that meditation workshop was amazing. And to touch back on your question, I just feel that the little things that get you worked up each day are not that important. Like if you just take a second and realize people really need so many other things in life and are going hungry and need a roof over their head, then your issue of someone bitching at you about not getting back to their email, you know, in a day, then that can wait, you know. And obviously everybody doesn't have the same perspective, and that's okay, because I think going on a spiritual journey like I did was amazing and exactly what I needed.
A lot of people, it must be hard for your girl, right? I mean, I could only imagine, because I know a lot of times there was some moment in time where I heard that, you know, the person who's having the medical difficulty, their spouse is often doing worse sometimes. It seems like she's been with you every step of the way. What's going on with her? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, she was with me. We've been almost together for 4 years, and she was with me on the search. And once I found it, she was furious, you know? She's like, she was with me. We share kind of the same perspective of holistic living, and everything that I've done, she has done with me.
She does everything too.
Everything. I went on like a three.
Is that just because she doesn't want muscular dystrophy? Or is she...
Well, maybe. Yeah, I wouldn't want it either. But no, she's just so supportive, and she's like, "Hey, I'm there with you every step of the way, and I'll do everything to make you feel better, so you're not in it alone." And we did a fruit cleanse before the grape thing, and she didn't do the grapes because she went crazy on the fruit, and so did I. And it was so tough. Like, we went from eating meat and enjoying ourselves and having filet mignons to going to vegan and not eating fish or chicken or any kind of red meat, whatever, to going cold turkey, just nothing, you know, like just vegetables and fruit. And it was tough. Like, I remember one time, like 3 months in, we were just like, we need a burger. We need a burger with bacon and cheese. And we stopped at BurgerFi in Fort Lauderdale. I'll never forget it. It was so freaking good. And that was the last time I had meat.
And that satisfied you.
Yeah.
The next time it didn't come up again.
It was great. But now in Nepal, I was out to lunch with Pooja. And she ordered these noodles, and on the top was like a big fried egg. And I forgot, like, we finished our lunch and there was still some left over. I was like, "Hey, let me try yours." And I forgot that there was an egg on there, and I tasted it and I almost threw up. And I used to eat like 7 eggs every morning.
Seven?
Yeah, I mean, I love getting in the gym and getting...
How do you prepare 7 eggs? Scrambled, or what do you think?
Yeah, I just scramble them really quick.
I'm a scramble guy because I'm pretty... I don't want to waste time.
Right, exactly.
Just fry them up.
Yep. But I don't eat eggs anymore. And
that's crazy.
It was satisfying, though, because I knew that I'm on the right path. And that taste of knowing that something that's not good for me is okay. Like,
they're not good for you.
Yeah.
Eggs are not really
good. Well, especially with the way they're raising chickens now. And
the industry is also bad.
It's insane.
I mean, you can still eat yummy food.
Yeah, there's unbelievable vegan food. There's desserts. Like, I was reading a book that was a raw chef wrote, and in Nepal, I got lucky enough to know the chef at one of the hotels, and I was like, "Look, man, I need something sweet, and I have this vegan brownie recipe, which was completely raw. You didn't have to cook it." And it was just like nuts and chia seeds and dates and raw cacao. And you put it in a blender and then you put it in the fridge for 2 hours and you eat it. It was awesome.
That sounds and, really good.
Yeah, and Sangeeta, the owner, tasted it and she's like, we're putting this on the menu. And so it was exciting too.
You've already helped the world.
Yeah, I've helped the menu. That's great.
So you, you're on a mission. How can people help? You guys, if you're listening to this and you don't help, you're an asshole. So I'm going to start there. Morgan's going to tell you where to go.
Well, we have a couple ways. We have our website, which is just morganhoffman.org. A lot of people spell Hoffman like Charlie with one N. So there's two F's and two N's.
Got it.
And we have an Instagram that will link you to the website. And we're going to have several great fundraisers throughout the year.
How much did you raise on Monday? I heard it was a lot.
We raised $1.5 million
for our first year. I heard year. $1 million, so it must, yeah. That must have been like at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
At 5 p.m. you wrote $1.5 million.
Yeah, it was insane. Amazing, it was insane. I can't believe it.
$1.5 million.
Yeah, $1.5 million, and we started the idea of it in March. So just a few short months, and all this came to fruition.
How much is it going to cost to do the center, you think? I mean, do you have any ideas yet?
I'm not sure.
It'll be in Florida.
It is going to be in Florida. We have a couple interested builders, and we don't have a set timeline yet. I know it's going to be a lot of money to do exactly what I want, and I want to save up until then. We have some great people who are really interested in helping in every way, shape, and form, from doctors volunteering to physical therapists to more donors to help with the building. And
I could go and do my first comedy show. I'd be happy. It might not be that funny, though.
But it's going to be a lot. You know, our next kind of endeavor is we've had the PGA Superstore. They're putting on an outing of their own in September up here in New Jersey, which all of their funds is going to our foundation. So it's going to be kind of like another pro-am, but on a smaller scale. And they've been so generous that out here on number two on Monday, they had a close to the pin contest for every single group. If you had a close to the pin, you won a $100 gear certificate. And that was so generous. And
whoa.
And now they're doing this charity event for my foundation, and we're advertising them for them on our platform. And then I think the next step, I've been talking to the Devils, and they want to do I want to do a NHL PGA Tour hockey game.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
So there's like 10 guys on tour that either grew up in Canada or play hockey.
Right.
And all of us have been talking about skating. Exactly. Dillette, Mackenzie Hughes, Mike Weir, maybe.
Yeah, Weir's he must be lefty in hockey.
He's got to be, yeah.
But
we want to do kind of an event at the Barclays Center in Jersey.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
And I want to sell that thing out. That would be so sick. There's so many great ideas that we have. We had a yacht show.
But wait, you couldn't have the NHL versus the PGA Tour.
Not the whole NHL, just the Devil.
But I mean, you couldn't have pro hockey players against pro golfers. Do you think you could?
Yeah, why not? I mean,
I just feel like they're gonna crush.
Well, yeah, they are, but you know, like, we'd be the underdogs,
right?
Or we can mix it. I don't know. It's just,
hey, I don't want to run your event. I'm just saying. I'm just curious.
Yeah. But yeah, there's so many great ideas that we have, and it's humbling, man. I can't believe the support we had on Monday night or Sunday night. We had 700 people here, Jake Owen performing. I didn't know Jersey had that many country fans. And I had a guy come up to me yesterday in the parking lot here at Arcola, and he's like a Jersey strong accent guy. And he was like, oh man, I'm just playing Jake Owen on Spotify right now. It was sick. Like, his songs, oh, they just make me want to go play golf and get drunk. No, it was so awesome. I've known Jake for like 5 years now, and he was very, very generous to donate his time. And it turned out to be an incredible event. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. So the way to donate is go online or send a check, get in touch with me or Chelsea. We have our emails on the website.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I guess I just want, in closing, I'm just curious, like, are you thinking about golf? Like, where are you?
How do you think about it? How do you do that? Because, I mean, just your life is... What is your life right now? Is it a question mark? I mean, well, you seem to be devoted to one thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't know I was going to be an event planner and a, you know, but I felt like a businessman. I've been on my laptop every day, all day, returning emails and just trying to pay my respects to all the donors who have helped out. And golf is on my mind. I miss it so much, and I hate working on a laptop, but it's so worth it. It's so worth it. And no, my goal right now is to be back for like the Sony Open in January. I'm very weak still. I'm in the gym, which is extremely exciting. The whole time in Nepal, I wasn't allowed to work out. And I'm back with my trainer, Don Saladino, in New York City. And it's one thing that I'm very passionate about, working on my body and getting strong. So that's the first thing that I want to do before coming back and really practicing hard, because if I started now, my swing speed would be really low, and then I'd be gaining strength, and there'd be a big adjustment period.
Right.
So I want to get strong, then start practicing hard again.
I want to see that too, man.
I'm excited.
Do you think, I can't remember where I heard this. I can't remember if someone was talking about this in relation to you or someone else or something, but could you take a cart at a PGA tournament? Aren't you allowed to with...
I don't think so.
Isn't you like a doctor's note or something like that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I can't.
You know what's really funny is... This came up randomly. We were at the Wyndham Championship maybe 4 years ago. And Ross Berlin, who is one of the PGA Tour player relations guys, him and I have become friends, and he's a great guy. And we were just out with some buddies one night, and I texted him. I said, are you allowed to have an animal on the course with you? And the animal that I was referring to was my friend's daughter, who was like 7. She had a hamster. Okay. And I was like, hey, can I keep a hamster in my golf bag? Just a stupid question. And he's like, you know what? That's a great question. I have no idea if you can keep an animal. And it came up. There were no rules about any animals that you could bring. So I was like, what if I had a dog?
You could bring a dog.
And he's like, yeah, it's allowed. So if I have a service dog, and I was like, so I can bring my dog out on the course and walk the fairways with me?
During a PGA Tour event?
Yeah, and he's like, there's no rules that say you can't.
Is it still that way?
That's to my knowledge.
Dude, I'm calling. Wait. You know I'm like big about the dog. I bring my dog with me to play golf all the time.
Do you?
He doesn't even need a leash, dude.
Yeah, mine doesn't either.
He just runs around. What kind of dog do you have?
A Doberman.
Whoa, how big?
He's only 1.5, and he's been through service dog training, and he's like so smart. He's been like 4.5 months out of his life he's in training. So he's like 85 pounds.
Big guy.
But it's supposed to be over 100, so we'll see.
Do they let you bring him out here?
Sometimes at night. They're kind of strict about it.
Same with my club in LA.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Which club?
Wilshire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a nice track. LPGA.
Sweet.
Yeah, man. I love taking the dog out on the course.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a 17-pound poodle Bichon Maltese, 8-year-old mutt from the pound.
That's awesome.
Named Snowball.
Nice.
And he's a sweetie. And, I just love him so much, you know.
That's great.
Yeah.
How old is he?
We don't know. They told me he was 10 when I got him. Okay. But I'm pretty sure he's younger than that.
When did you get him?
Jumping around. 2 years ago.
Okay.
He's always jumping around and...
Yeah.
He seems pretty healthy. When I first got him, we thought maybe he had a hernia because he would sometimes whimper. And then, I don't know, I don't know what his life was like. I don't know where he lived or who took or didn't take care of him. Or
I have a mutt, too.
Yeah.
He's, we think he's 8, but he's like he has a brindle coat. And he kind of looks like a pit bull, kind of looks like a bunch of different stuff. But he got hit by a car and broke both of his legs, and his name is Scribbs. Because my aunt had him and nursed him back to health. She was a vet. She named him Scribbles because of his coat, and Scribbles was just like kind of weird. So I shortened it. And then my Doberman, his name is Yama.
I like that name.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
In Buddhist, it means kind of like protector. So it was like a Nepali inspired name.
Couldn't bring him to Nepal, though.
No, I mean, I could, but I just didn't want to put him on a plane for that long.
Yeah.
But he flies with me all the time, so it's great.
You bring him upstairs? You bring him? They leave him downstairs?
No, on my plane.
Oh right, that's right. I forgot your Arnold Palmer. Jeez.
Yeah, he's great.
Well, that's the fourth time in this podcast that I've been I don't know, man. It's like you're, you know, you can have a conversation with somebody and you can talk or whatever like that, but I do believe that there's a way to actually, like, just sort of communicate. This is going to sound lame, but, you know, emotionally, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can, it's the fourth time in this time we've been talking where it's just been like, I don't know. There's an immense amount of feelings going on at this linen tablecloth at the country club here.
In front of the fireplace.
Yeah, and you've heard probably people passing through. I know you got to go to a meeting a little bit. I really appreciate your time.
No, it's great to be on.
I do want to know, well, first of all, if you're going to bring Scribs, I'm sorry, Paya?
Yama.
Yama. If you're going to bring Yama out to the course and Ross Berlin's going to be there, I want to see that because I know Ross and he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's great.
I love that guy. And also, I do want to know if you're going to go back to Nepal because I'd like to go with you.
Sweet.
I would love
to. Yeah, you're welcome anytime. They're like my family over there, so if you want to go and stay at the hotel, I can set you up
too. I have a 10-year visa, so I'm good to go.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, frighteningly. I had a 90-day visa, and I had to go renew it, so
yeah,
I probably should have just got a bunch.
Get a bunch, yeah.
Get a bunch more.
And then they, yeah, anyway, it's a wonderful place. I'd love to document it, and you know, I want to see what those underwear look like.
I'll show you a picture, but I'm not going to show you them on me.
No, but I just, I really appreciate your time, and I hope everyone listening really, you know, take some of what you said to heart. I like the idea of the responsibility thing. I think that's something that we as golfers and we as humans kind of, unfortunately, just kind of looking for the easy way a lot of times, myself included.
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, look at the whole way the world is going. It's about laziness. Like, look at a minivan, for example, kind of really random, but the doors open on their own. Yeah. Like, it's just you push a button. That's it. Like, how about our phones? We can literally access anything at any time and we have unlimited knowledge in our hand at all points. And it's just people want things now. That's the bottom line. And nothing in life that is really important, I believe, happens now. It takes time. Love, changing your mind, changing your body, and getting to where you want. It's like, it takes time, and you just have to have patience and dedication and perseverance. And I've learned that a lot over the last few years, and I know that I'm only 29, and that's why I'm kind of taking a break right now from golf. Like, I can play golf right now.
Yeah.
And really? I have a status on the PGA Tour, and I can go play, but I want to be my best, and I know that there's a cure out there, and I'm going to cure it before I come back.
I keep wanting to forget to ask you about, did you look into Steve Jobs at all?
Yeah. I mean,
different, obviously.
You know, Steve went to Nepal to get treatment.
So I don't know what happened.
From this doctor.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and he was sending him stuff. And I think it was his pancreas. He stopped taking the meds I'm not going to call it meds, I'm going to call it herbs.
Sure.
That Josie gave him. And he went and got surgery and, like, more pills and stuff from his doctor that
Western.
In the U.S. and that he ultimately passed away from.
Well, that's fucked up because the story that I heard or that I digested was he went all Eastern and it didn't work.
Yeah. No, but he was experimenting with other stuff and didn't happen fast enough for him.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What a weird... Because I was like, I meant to bring it up, I forgot, and then I was like, geez, should I bring it up? It's kind of got a bad ending.
Yeah.
It's kind of not a good story.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, man, because you would think if you're Steve fucking Jobs.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of the crazy thing, too, is when you look at the body.
Well, look at the education in Western world, you know? What is it? Look at these advertisements on TV. Here is blah, blah, blah. It's going to cure your anxiety and stress, but the side effects are death, heart attack, your leg falling off. Like, I mean, it's absurd, and people still take it because they don't care, because they think it's a cure. But, you know, people need to research and do some time and just take care of their bodies. Like, it's important.
I'm really excited to see the Morgan Hoffman Foundation. I'm really excited to see the wonderful group of men and women that play on all the tours, right? Rally around your, like, wonderful mission, you know? It's just going to be great, dude.
Thank you.
I almost said it couldn't have happened to a better guy, but you know, I feel like you, that wasn't funny, but you know what I mean? It's like, you're just.
No, it's, I feel lucky that it was me too. It sucks.
Wait, you just said that.
Yeah, no.
You just said you feel lucky.
Yeah, 100%. Because I know I can make a difference. I know that there's not many other people that believe that there's a cure, because look at all the people that have muscular dystrophy in the Western world. They're like, yeah, there's no cure. Like, we pray every day, but that there is a cure.
Go buy a wheelchair.
Yeah, like, it's, I'm going to be in a wheelchair one day. Fuck that. Like, there's a cure out there. There's a whole world. There's 7 billion people, and you're telling me that no one has a cure? That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to find it.
And we're done. Thank you.
Hold on, I have one question to ask
you. Oh, you have a question for me?
Yes. Your tattoos, they're very eclectic.
I have a couple.
I got my first one.
In Nepal?
In Nepal. In
really?
Tamil.
Yeah. I want to see it.
It's like really small, but it means for me, it just means direction and discipline.
It's like an arrow-ish triangle the inside of your bicep.
Yeah, so it's all, it means, it's a symbol for a bunch of different things. My mom flew for Delta, right? So it's kind of like a
Delta. It's pretty similar to the Delta look. I like that.
And then it's also like a directional gyro when you're flying in the plane, and that's kind of like what you're looking at to see if you're on the horizon or not.
Okay, I like that. I love your aeronautical roots. I'm a freak for flying. So I played golf today with one of the guys from United.
Nice.
And I was going like just off the deep end with the science of flight, the turbulence, the just the logistics of running an airline.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know what? Fuck it. I was going to turn the mics off, but I'll just tell you. So this is actually the symbol for, this means I don't drink alcohol or do drugs. And that started 17 years ago.
Is that your symbol or the symbol?
It's the symbol for a 12-step program.
Okay.
That, you know, I'm technically not supposed to align myself with on press, radio, and films. There's like an anonymity thing. But anyway, that's the symbol for that. It also means that potentially that I'm a lesbian, I found out later.
Oh, congratulations.
Which I also am a lesbian too. So I love sleeping with women of all, types. And... This is, I'm into meditation, and I actually found meditation through golf. Zen Golf, Dr. Joe Parent wrote this little book on, he's a Tibetan Buddhist from New Jersey also.
Really?
And he's a Jersey guy, he's about 65 right now, and lives out in Los Angeles. And I had gotten into golf through my brother randomly. Prior to that, I had hated it. Everyone's listened to the podcast, has heard the story 1,000 times, but... I got into golf, and shortly after that, my brother sent me a copy of Zen Golf, and I immediately learned about kindness and compassion and patience and visualization on the golf course. And so golf was immediately a Buddhist exercise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, I mean, any athlete of your level, it must be that, or else you'll just turn into a psychopath.
That's true.
So through that process, I met a bunch of meditation teachers. The most recent one I had used this as his mantra, I love you, keep going. So we would do 30-minute meditations just saying, I love you, keep going, over and over and over again. And you would variate between saying it to yourself visually or saying it to other people.
That's my girlfriend, Chelsea, right there.
Chelsea! Wait, I'll say hi after.
She's busy.
So that was the meditation mantra. This is have you ever done the thing where you draw something not looking at it and you don't lift the pen off the piece of paper?
Yes.
So this is my ex-wife, and that's me. I drew her and she drew me. And
what are all these things?
Well, I'm a bad drawer, apparently, and that's her hair. And I think that was also... It looks like she's a frog with a mustache.
Wow.
But really, it's supposed to be a beautiful woman with long hair. She did a really good job doing me.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah, and then we had a friend who didn't know how to do tattoos do those.
I love that. That's sick.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Hi.
We were just talking about you.
We're just going through all the... Hi, Chelsea.
Hi.
Good to meet you.
I'm Chelsea.
Nice to meet you. I'm Eric. How are you? Hi. Hey, I'm Eric.
I'm Mark.
Hey, Mark. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Photograph like a week ago.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're broadcasting. You're on it.
We're just... Morgan had one question. We're just going over all my body ink here. Luckily, it's mostly on my body. And then this is a motorcycle. I rode a motorcycle across country.
Did you really?
Stopped in Iowa, and I had a ride through a thunderstorm, and I was pretty convinced that I should be dead. And I ended up at a person whose house, a house of a person whom I didn't know, friend of a friend, And I, the whole way there, I'd been thinking about angels, and I didn't know what was keeping me alive. It didn't seem like...
Would you get, like, struck by lightning, or was this bad
storm?
No,
it was just,
or?
You know how the freeways sometimes get pushed over into two lanes mm-hmm. instead of four? Mm-hmm. So there was oncoming traffic right against me, and the road was grooved, which is very scary on a motorcycle.
Yes.
You ride?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. What do you got?
I don't have one yet, but I'm planning.
You're gonna get one?
Yeah, I'm planning on getting a BMW Scrambler.
Oh,
R90.
I like that. Yeah, like kind of vintage, or is that a new model?
It's a new model, but I'm gonna kind of like soup it up a little bit.
Right, right. Beamers are the way to go. They're slick.
What do you have?
I don't ride anymore.
Okay.
I've been in too many accidents.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that all the accidents were my fault. And so at that point, I had been in three, and I was like, you know what? I think third time's a charm. I don't need to wait for someone else to do something.
That's good.
Because in L.A., it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, yeah, I ran into this guy, and he was like, yo, I'm going to go design some tats. Do you want to come? And it was like midnight, so we went. And then he's like, I'll give you a tat. And he's a really good tattoo artist. And then that's obviously someone's name on my hand. That, you know, and I got one here that's a prayer.
Awesome.
And it's sort of like, you know, it's personal. I'm not going to take my shirt off right now.
Nice, thank you.
Long answer.
No, that was great. Thank you.
Thanks for being on here, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad we had the opportunity.
Me too.
Thanks for making
it. Thank you very much.
We could just say thank you for another hour. I feel like we're both really grateful dudes.
Hey, thank you.
You're going to be on SNL soon. Watch. All right, everybody. Have a great week. And like Morgan said, check him out on Instagram. It's Morgan Hoffman with two N's, PGA.
Okay? Instagram, yeah.
On Instagram. And from there, you
and
can get
to... And then the Morgan Hoffman Foundation is our Instagram.
Okay. That one's better. Whatever. Follow fucking both, guys.
Yeah, go to...
Don't be stingy.
Yeah,
do no one cares how many follow, but people you follow. And then morganhoffman.org.
Yeah, perfect.
Thanks, man. We'll see you soon.
Sweet.